As we continue here, coming up, a reminder on what's coming up later on today. Vince Young. Yeah, I know you people around here are familiar with his work. Vince Young will be on the program. Alonzo Mourning will be on the program as well. Barrett Salee, the lead SEC football writer for the Bleacher Report, will talk some more about Bobby Petrino. And Jeff Zilgit, who writes about the NBA for USA Today, will be on the show as well. Speaking of Bobby Petrino, he's got some situations coming up he's got to iron out here. Professionally, that's just about winding down. Legally, who knows? I mean, he's out a lot of money, fired for cause. There was this $20,000. I don't know if this is his money or if it was the school's money that he gave the girlfriend, who also was an employee of his. So there's some sexual harassment things. We assume that Mrs. Petrino is not happy with all this as well. So we thought we'd bounce around some ideas. Again, somewhat hypothetical, but somewhat realistic as well, given the Bobby Petrino situation. Our next guest is an attorney and a CPA with Cordell & Cordell, attorney Joe Cordell. Joe, welcome. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me on.
You bet. Let's start this off with, obviously, this guy was, Bobby Petrino was concerned about his family finding out. So I'm going to presume that the wife is not too happy about finding out he was out riding a motorcycle with a girlfriend, alleged girlfriend.
That's a safe assumption.
Yeah, yeah. Let's start from there. So, and that's why the entire cover-up started up, right? I mean, this is why he wasn't truthful at the beginning. This is all so that the family doesn't find out.
Yeah, but, you know, you have to suspect that this is not entirely something new to Mrs. Petrino. I mean, I'll bet that there have been previous incidences over the years. I mean, it's been a long marriage, I think 20-plus years. So I think that this is a guy that she's not entirely unfamiliar with.
And so the interesting part about this was this quote-unquote girlfriend, just as of 2 weeks ago, became an employee of his. Now, she worked at the university. She's a former athlete there. Talk to me about where this can become sexual harassment. Let's say, you know, both were willing to be in this relationship, but it gets a little funky when this is a person you've just hired as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing about, and of course I approach this, Craig, entirely from the perspective of a divorce lawyer, but you know, whenever you have misconduct like this, and you see it all the time with professional athletes, then, you know, it has effects that ramify throughout the entire case. In other words, in this case, you're right. There is potential civil liability, and to the extent that there's a judgment, then that can impact marital assets. So how is a divorce court going to deal with this reduced pot, or what more likely it expects will be a reduced pot? Because to the extent that there's any family litigation that goes forward, you know, the jury's not going to be out, so to speak, on what Petrino's liability is going to be down the road. Now, in Arkansas, I checked the statute, and in Arkansas, they're not going to consider marital misconduct in reducing the marital estate. Some states do, but Arkansas is one of those that do not. But things such as dissipation means wasting marital assets. And clearly, when a guy gives money, which is a marital asset, even if he earns it, it's a marital asset. To the extent he hands money to his girlfriend, you know, that's something that the divorce courts respond very harshly to. So I don't think he's going to get a very warm reception in a divorce court.
I know this is just pennies on the dollar, but are you telling me that Mrs. Petrino could feasibly get some of that 20 grand back that he gave the girlfriend?
Oh, of course. And furthermore, I'm suggesting that she would get a disproportionate portion of this pot because of what is likely to flow from his misconduct, financially and otherwise.
Now, you always hear, and I've not been through a divorce, thankfully, but you always hear about future earnings. Now, I'm thinking Bobby Petrino's future earnings are in the toilet. They're gone. I mean, he's got a stained reputation with colleges, and he's got a stained reputation with the NFL because of the way he left the Falcons. He may never coach at a big-time level again, and these $3.6 million annual salaries are a thing of the past. So I would suppose for a person hypothetically like Mrs. Petrino that this would be very bad news.
Well, you know, it you're right. It's frustrating to the wife and her attorney when you have the husband who's been engaged in this sort of misconduct. It's frustrating to the divorce court because their perspective is that she, over the years, in various tangible and intangible ways, contributed to the development of his earning power, you know, to his reputation. And to the extent that he squandered that, and as you suggested, I think correctly, that in the future his income can be expected to go down dramatically, you know, what does she do about that? And, you know, she's kind of helpless as he's had, you know, had this harmful effect on the primary asset of the marriage, which is his future income. But really, as a practical matter, all the court can do is give her a disproportionate share of the marital assets, not so much because it's punishment for marital misconduct, but because there's a real economic effect of what he's done. But at the end of the day, you know, there's no way to make her whole for his decision.
We're talking with Joe Cordell of Cordell & Cordell. He's an attorney and a CPA. And I've always wondered how tight or airtight are prenups and maybe somebody that doesn't have one. And I have no idea what the Petrino situation is. I do know, like, Kobe Bryant and his marital problems does not have one. And I assume that's going to cost him. But how airtight are those things?
Well, they can be very airtight. I mean, it's helpful if it is drafted and signed in a state where they have the uniform prenuptial statute, because that's clearly designed to create agreements that are enforceable. But in the majority of states, or certainly the situation 25 plus years ago when these parties would have been married, there wouldn't have been a statute in effect, and it would have been governed by common law. So then I would say that it's very porous, meaning it's very vulnerable. I think that that in Kobe's case, it would be a more recent document, and if he's dotted his I's and crossed his T's, then they can be very effective.
And is it always automatic, like in Kobe's case, where there isn't one, that, hey, the wife just, boom, automatically gets half? Is that usually how it goes?
In the absence of an agreement, I mean, anything acquired during the marriage is going to be a marital asset, and most of these guys start out broke. So, yeah, as a practical matter, that's kind of the starting point. And then you can talk about misconduct and other such things. But in his case, you know, it's going to be a big pot, and I think that a court's going to consider the whole picture, including his conduct.
You, I believe, specialize in on the male side of these divorce proceedings. Do the men ever win? It seems like the women get the house, get the kids, get the money. Maybe it's usually because the men are the one fooling around. I don't know. But does it ever balance out on the other side?
Well, Craig, I kind of bring a national perspective because you're right. We do focus on representing men, and we're probably the largest domestic relations firm in the country. And it depends on the state and even depends on the county and the judge. But I can tell you that there's been a lot of progress in the last 15 years. So it's much better today than it was. But still, I mean, it's in some courts, it's clearly an uphill battle, and our objective is to get our clients a level playing field.
Speaking of another high profile divorce in sports, Frank McCourt, of course, with the Dodgers, he's just sold the team for $2 billion. He's going to be able to pay off the wife and make a profit after almost running the team into the ground. What were your thoughts when you watched that whole proceeding going on? Because that was an absolute circus.
It was, and it was very complicated because on the one hand you had this divorce court proceeding that was taking place in L.A., and then on the other hand you had, you know, this bankruptcy proceeding that was governed, I think, entirely out of Delaware. So as a result, it was federal law versus California law, domestic law versus bankruptcy law, and so to some extent even the divorce court judge wasn't clear as to what authority he had. I think at the end of the day, when things were looking pretty dark for Frank, I think that he managed to pull this out. I think that the deal he brokered at a time when his empire looked most shaky was probably the time for him to negotiate a deal with his wife, when it wasn't clear that he'd be able to sell this team for this record number. So I think at the end of the day, he's come out contrary to what anybody predicted was going to happen.
I've said people criticized him for years and talked about what a horrible businessman he was. I'd say he's a pretty good businessman if he comes out with $1 billion on top after all this.
Yeah, apparently he had a plan, but it sure wasn't apparent to anybody else.
No doubt about that.
Including his attorneys, I might add.
What and how does that compare to the biggest divorce, the most assets involved? That was pretty hefty. What comes to mind? Maybe one of the biggest ones you've ever seen or followed in your career.
Well, you're right. I mean, that's definitely one of the bigger ones. I always watch. I'm interested in high profile divorces where you have men who have been entrepreneurs. They have they're responsible for probably assembling 99.9% of the total assets, and seeing how courts treat that. Jack Welch's divorce was of interest to me in that the courts were willing to acknowledge, you know, his role in accumulating the assets and not simply saying, well, gee, this is a partnership, so what do? Our starting point is, as you and I were talking a few minutes ago, Craig, 50-50. Well, courts are often reluctant to do that when clearly you have this entrepreneur that's responsible for this fortune. Unfortunately, Jack married a very clever woman who happened to be a lawyer and happened to be very aggressive. So she did extraordinarily well coming in comparatively late on the scene. But that's just an example that comes to mind.
Does Chris Humphries have any claim on Kim Kardashian for a wedding that was just, or a marriage that was 72 days?
I don't think that. I don't think the courts are going to treat that as a financial claim. I mean, I think that they're going to see it essentially as a publicity stunt, and I'd be surprised if there are a lot of dollars that change hands in that divorce, except to the lawyers.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, Joe, I appreciate having you on. That's a lot of good insight on a lot of different cases, a lot of stuff going on, fortunately or unfortunately, I guess, depending on how you want to look at it. But thanks for coming on today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Craig.